So it's not as easy as just finding a tradesman, but you've got to then build the relationship, and understand rules and regulations around doing those renovations. Well, there's certain things you just cannot do because of earthquake regulations, because of local council regulations, because of community regulations. Like I wanted to donate, simple thing, I wanted to donate to the community, my community, in Tukrom in Boyodo, so my area of my neighborhood. I wanted to buy a new dustbin, and a dustbin is the central rubbish bin down the end of your street. Ours was old, it was tacky, and there are elderly people in my neighborhood. I thought, well, that'd be something nice that we could do for the community. That has now been going on for 4 months to get approval to put in a fancy new double door stainless steel off the ground steel for bears and squirrels and everything like that. That's now, we're now at 4 months. So the community supervisor has said no problems. The community leader has said, the neighborhood supervisor has said no problems. The community leader has said no problems. The community has said no problems. Thank you. We're very grateful. Now it's with City Hall, and City Hall have some questions.
Hi there, folks, and welcome or welcome back to Nippon Trading International's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima McGinn, and this podcast is brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis of realestate.jp. He's a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families who are looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for over two decades now. And for about half of that time, he's been buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in Tokyo on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So he's got dedicated loan officers in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener of the podcast, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions, which means that you're already aware of the fact that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on sales@realestate.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so extra special episode for you today. This one's a conversation that I've recently had with one of our favorite clients. His name is Mark. He's an Australian based on the Gold Coast, which is also where I've lived for about a decade. Awesome place, highly recommended if you've never been, but that's besides the point. Mark's kind of special to us because aside from the fact that he's a super likable dude, as you'll find out in a moment, he's also extremely business savvy and has got some phenomenal people skills and project management skills, which means that shortly after he's used our services to help him purchase and slightly manage his first holiday home, he's hit the ground running and then some. Not only took on a phenomenal renovation project all on his own, but he's also since started a business helping short-term stay operators in Hokkaido to market, accept bookings from, and work directly with their guests, as opposed to using booking platforms like Airbnb or Booking.com. And while it seems like, and he definitely does have the Midas touch, and you know, he just has a knack for problem solving and generally making things work, he's also got a very practical and efficient approach, I find, to dealing with the multiple challenges that some of these ventures present him with. So really what I wanted to do was just give him the mic and let him talk. And he did that, you'll soon hear. And we talk about his entire journey. So from buying that holiday home in Hokkaido, but even before that, all about falling in love with Japan, its hidden gems in the first place, moving to and living in Hokkaido, which is hardcore snow country, by the way. And in his case, specifically about Otaru, where he's purchased, which is a very interesting little town. We talk about its history and current environment, everything that Mark's done since purchasing, i.e. equipping, furnishing, renovating, / upgrading your property on your own, how to, again, hit the ground running, and why getting local with the locals is so important. He's figured out short-term stay regulations, compliance issues, and when it might be a good idea to do marketing and booking yourself instead of using those booking platforms, building teams, professional networks, the danger of thinking you know everything, which really is all about being culturally aware, why it's important to either know what you're doing or hire someone who does, the newly minted, of course, Hokkaido short-term stay booking platform, and my personal favorite in these podcasts, a bunch of surprising, often funny, but really essentially horror stories that he's had to face along the way. So a super fun, long, detailed conversation with a client who's managed to pull off almost entirely on his own what many of you listeners are interested in doing or trying to do right now. So I'm sure you'll find a ton of value in this episode. Enjoy the conversation, and I'll see you again on the other side. All right. Thanks for coming on, Mark. It's been a while. Good to see you again.
Yeah, good to see you too, Luke. Good to see you.
Reason I asked you if I could interview you is because we've got a lot of people that are constantly asking us about very similar things to what you've actually done. So I wanted to have a success story on file. Part of it is to be a success, to show people what a success story looks like. But I guess the other part of it is to show them the kinds of things that they actually have to deal with that they might be a bit naive about when they get into this story. So just to give people a rough background, you contacted us, I think, about 3 years ago now, wasn't it? Three years? Pre-pandemic. Oh, my God.
Yeah, pre-pandemic, remember?
Yeah, holy crap. So that's like 6 years now. Oh, Jesus.
It is. It is, because the first property we looked at was on Main Island, and your lovely wife went out and personally inspected it for us on live stream. It was an Akia. We learned some really good lessons from looking at that property and then heeding your advice about buying abandoned properties in remote areas of Japan. So that's where we started. That was an eye-opener, and it started a different journey.
So when you first contacted us, the idea was just to looking for a holiday home for yourself, right?
Yeah, look, I run, as you know, I run some pretty substantial companies, and I first visited Japan, I think, with the family in not that long ago, really. 2008, I think, was the first time we were there. And then we're there again just as the pandemic hit. The large boat in Tokyo Harbor had COVID on it. The large ship had COVID on it.
Yeah, I remember that.
We were just exiting the country as that was becoming known. So just from that, I just found a place in the world where I could relax. And it wasn't Tokyo. Tokyo is good fun and that, but I just found a place in the countryside when we went off the beaten track a little bit, and we ended up then going to a place called Kanazawa, which for me was just heaven. Just a lovely, lovely, peaceful, beautiful spot to go to. Little did I know it was the summer playground of the rich and famous of Japan. So that sort of priced me out of that one. I went, well, I'm not paying. I'm not paying the equivalent of $1 million USD for some of these massive estates in there. But yeah, look, that started the journey, and I actually got put onto you by the fellow who runs the website for cheap homes in Japan.
Cheap Houses Japan, yeah, Michael.
Cheap Houses Japan, yeah, Michael. Yeah. So Michael actually put me onto you, and that's where our relationship started, and our relationship is still going strong today. You manage quite a few aspects of our property and give me help in other areas, and we trade off on some business here and there and contacts, and away we went. And I sort of, after having looking at that abandoned house, which was over to the northwest of.
I remember now. That was the one on the Akia Bank, wasn't it? It wasn't even listed on a realtor website.
That's right, yeah. And it was a magnificent Japanese home. Magnificent. But as as Chica and yourself sort of pointed out, especially Chica, as we're walking through, this need to be done, this need to be done, this need to be done. And by the way, Mark, there are no tradesmen in this area, and it would highly doubt that a tradesman would come out to these areas. It's just not financially viable. You'd have to go and find an old retired tradesman. At that stage, my Japanese communication was very poor. I'm not saying it's great now, but it's a lot better than what it was. You don't get much of a choice in Hokkaido. So that really opened my eyes up, but I still had the thought of that I wanted a property. I wanted a nice property. I wanted to bring my Western influence into the property without diminishing the beauty of Japan, and I wanted to hold it in respect in a community. I wanted to be part of a community, but I also wanted to make our properties available to Westerners to come and experience real Japan, rather than being doing the tourist trail, which is you land in Tokyo, you go to Kyoto, you go to Osaka, Hiroshima, and see the Instagrammable sites, and then you come home again. You might go to Narrabel Onsen, you might go to Hakaba to do some snowboarding, but that's sort of the tourist trail. But we didn't want people to see that. We wanted people to see the real community and give them the opportunity to stay in a house in a community and be part of that and really enjoy what Japan people have to offer. And there's so many hidden gems that I know where you live, you probably haven't seen half of them in your lifetime. I'm not going to see 100th of the little special hidden gems all through Hokkaido. So yeah, that was our thought pattern. And then we went on the march with you. I think you lined us up in Hokkaido. I landed. The pandemic was still happening, but I had allowances for businesses, so I was quite blessed, and I had 101 vaccinations. So I got to Japan, and then everyone went, "We're not having vaccinations," but we all wear masks, so that was different. I'm going, okay. So I got used to all of that, and I think you lined up. I think initially I in it was in an 20, what are we in now? 20, so 2021, 2020, 2021,
When you came in
October
was
20.
2021.
Yeah, October 21 is the Hokkaido, when I landed in Hokkaido. And we looked at 16 properties, I think it was. So I looked at 16 properties across the week. Thank you to the Dormy Inn in Otaru for putting me up for 2 weeks. We went around and had a look. And then all of a sudden, I was live streaming with my family and said, "We found this house in a lovely little, the equivalent of a suburb called Boyodo, in a small city called Otarushi or Otaru." And both my daughters and my wife went, "That's it, that's it, that's the one." And sure enough, that was the one. So we ended up buying a beautiful, fully renovated, empty home. So it was fully renovated. There was nothing in it at all, but the owners who were from Sapporo had done a lovely job at getting it back to modern renovation, which is unheard of, as you would know, in a lot of Japanese areas. They just don't do those renovations to their homes. They'll knock them down and build again, or they'll let them fall down over time, unfortunately. But yeah, we ended up getting it, and then we had to go through the process with you, and boy, was that entertaining. I can remember spending my first night. It was when we took ownership of the house that day. I came back for the settlement. I can't even remember when we settled, but it was freezing cold. I think we settled late November. We settled
Yeah,
in
towards the
late
end of the year,
November.
I remember that.
Yep, and we got an early taste of winter. So I was in a house with no heating. No, I had heating upstairs. It was minus 14 outside. I had snow covering the windows on the lower level. I had no bedding. I had no nothing at all. And that's where the adventure started. And it
I remember
was
you telling me,
fantastic.
I'm insulating this one room with this heater. That's the only place I can stay in the
And I made sure that the made sure I didn't have too much to drink at night, because I didn't want to get up out of the room to go to the toilet during the night. It was too cold. So I think I had my excuse me. I think I had my last drink at night. I had a glass of water probably about 7 p.m. at night, and that was it. I wouldn't let myself have any more liquid until the next morning. So
So,
I
Otaru,
always
I
sort
mean,
of draw a
you're
line at
talking about minus 14. Maybe give people a
that.
bit of a clue of where and what Otaru is exactly.
So Otaru is a it's got an unusual history, a very unusual history. At one stage, it was the wealthiest city in Hokkaido, and one of the wealthiest ever in Japan. And that's because it was because of herring. They were the home of herring, and we actually have the remnants of herring mansions still there today. And the herring millionaires, or in our equivalency, they would have been billionaires. The wealth they had was extraordinary. But over time, it's dilapidated. There's nothing special in Otaru for a long time. And there's a 100 year, our canal, the Otaru Canal, just celebrated its 100th anniversary last year, which was fantastic. Yeah, last year. It's a destination that's in the, how would you describe it, the northwest of Hokkaido. So on the freeway, it's about a 45-minute drive from downtown Sapporo to downtown Otaru, depending on the weather, the seasons, and the traffic. Although traffic's never much of a problem. From Nuchitosi Airport, it's about an hour and 20. People may not be aware, but Nuchitosi Airport is a long way from Sapporo and equally a long way from Otaru. It's not right there, although they describe it. So it's a lovely town. It's declined over a long time, but now it's coming back, and that's thanks to the plans for the Shinkansen, which is going from Hakodate to Sapporo to Otaru, believe it or not, and
We
then down
definitely
to Seiko. And
have more and more people looking at Otaru. I know it's gaining popularity with foreigners as well.
yeah, so yeah, absolutely, it's gaining popularity. I just met an Australian couple who bought in a suburb beside us. But they only just bought, a lovely couple. And look, Okaru is sleepy. It's near every major snow resort that you'd want to go to. So we've got Kiroro, we've got Kokusai, we've got Asari. So and then there's a local one, Mount Tangu, where Tangurama. So Mount Tangu is just a family little fun thing to do with young kids. It's not really. If you're out there like me, I don't really go there because it's not what I'm after. I'm after big, long, multi-kilometer runs, which is what I've got access to, literally 7, 14, and 20 minutes away from the house. So it's quite easy to do. It's not an English-speaking city. You're very hard pressed to find English-speaking. There's more in Sapporo, but you're very hard pressed to find English speakers in Otaru. It's a very traditional city in terms of real Japan, not traditional as in Edo period. So it's a real everyday life city that moves on city councils, regulations, and so forth. They're caught in a little bit of a time warp in terms of city regulations and so forth, but they are trying to modernize things quickly, but they have a very aged population. And that age population isn't going anywhere fast. But there are families starting to migrate from Sapporo thanks to the pandemic work from home type of thing. And that's flowed on to people working remotely from Otaru who work in Sapporo. So great little spot. It's got every connection I want, freeways, trains. Bus service, every convenience you want, many, many supermarkets, many fresh foods. And it's probably, I think it is the capital of seafood, in Hokkaido. So we get numerous varieties of snow crabs. We get massive oysters. The famous Hokkaido scallops come from around Hokkaido and the other, from around Otaru and the other side of Hokkaido. We get lobsters and we get all different crabs and fish. So absolutely beautiful.
Now, if you've attended any of our recent JREP Summit events in Tokyo or online, you've probably heard our sponsor, Robert Miller from Innovatius.com. He's been in WebDiz Solutions here in Japan for the past 25 years, and he's also an active investor in Japanese real estate property, as well as global online property, which is his specialty and what his company Innovatius is all about. They offer a full suite of website services for entrepreneurs and small business owners, including all aspects of web design and management, backup and updates, content formatting and editing, proactive maintenance and error fixing, you name it, with a strong focus on SEO excellence, which is what gets you those hardcore top-of-the-list search engine rankings. But there is a difference. Innovatius works off a simple, all-inclusive monthly subscription model, as opposed to the typical outdated and confusing project model. So you never have to wonder how much any request for any work to be done on your website might cost. It's always $497 per month. And if that's not enough, if you've mentioned you've heard of their services on the Japan Real Estate Podcast, you'll also get 10% off this monthly price for life. Also, and equally important, if not more, you can try out Innovatius for just 1 month, then switch them off, on again later if you want, and so forth. There are no minimum subscription terms. Now, if you're a small business owner, managing and growing a website is super distracting and time-consuming, right? That's exactly where Innovatius comes in. Robert's team takes care of all of that for you so that you can focus on what you do best. So feel free to email Rob on robert@innovatius.com, and his team will conduct a full SEO and website audit on your site, reveal anything that you should address to increase your website's appeal, and provide you with an easy-to-read detailed report with your own branding so that you can make some informed decisions on your online strategy and watch your business grow as you implement it. So once more, robert@innovatius.com. Drop him a line and get your website reviewed today. I didn't know about the work from home / digital nomad thing. So you're saying this is like Saitama and Yokohama to Tokyo, Otaru is like the solution for Sapporo, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. And Zen, there's a little suburb of Otaru called Zenobaku, which is just before you get to Otaru. It's a beachside. Otaru is a port city with beaches to the north towards Yoichi, but Zenobaku is the the poorer side of Otaru City, and it's very popular with digital nomads. And Yoichi is starting to be. There's quite a few trendy young Japanese who've moved there, anywhere in their late 20s to mid 30s, and they've started very cool indeed. They're starting to put very cool things like modern. I don't call them onsens anymore because they're not like an onsen, so they are outdoor sauna, outdoor hot tubs, eating, dining, drinking, and accommodation all in one. So it's not your traditional onsen as the dictionary would define it or as Japanese history would define it. It's a modern take on onsen, and there a lot of hip people getting along. Geez, I'm showing my age now. I'm calling people hip.
I should come back for another visit. I've only been there once, but you got me drooling now. Okay, so for people to understand, you're not here for like your typical ski holiday, 2-3 weeks a year, and then back to Australia. You're here a fair bit of the year, aren't you?
Yeah, so I live on the Gold Coast in Australia, so I've got my companies remotely based there, so I don't really have to go anywhere else. And as you can imagine, it's only getting hotter in Australia. The Gold Coast or Southeast Queensland seems to be copping the brunt of those heat increases, where it's winter here today. Yes, still in winter. And it was 33 degrees today. It was 32 degrees yesterday, and it was 32 degrees a couple of days before that. And by the looks of my iPhone weather, it's hovering around 31, 32 for the foreseeable future. So I think it goes 10 days, I think. I definitely don't go to Otaru in summer because people, believe it or not, it is stiflingly hot in the two summer months. Yeah, July and August. So I was over there last year for renovation reasons. I had a large retaining wall built around the entire house. When I say large, it's more in the ground than out of the ground. It's only about 2 foot, 3 foot high, but it's 6 foot in the ground for earthquake reasons, engineering. I have never been so hot in my life, and I've been to the UAE. I've been, I spend, my wife and I spend summers in California, as did our family, and I've never been so hot in my life. It was stiflingly hot for 2 weeks. So they do get it well into the 30s during August. Only a couple of weeks of it, then it starts to cool traditionally. And we only get 2 months of summer up in Hokkaido. So we only have July and August, and then we have what translates to the long, hard winter in there from December through to March. And we have snow on ground until well into, if not the end of April. And up in the mountains, you can snowboard until some areas until the first or second week in May.
Yeah, I know. We tried to, a customer of ours was waiting for viewings and the agent just recently, and the agent kept saying, no, still snowing. No, can't go there. No, can't go there. No, wait.
That's true. Yeah, it's so true. It's so true. Just to give people an idea, last year my wife and one of my daughters came over in January, and we were actually up north at Furano, which is what people may know as the beautiful lavender. So you see the images of the lavender fields, that's Furano. And it's beautiful, beautiful place. And in winter, it's there's a lot of snow sports around there, big snow fields and so forth. But we were coming back from there, and we got caught in the largest snowstorm in recorded history for the greater Otaru region. And it was unbelievable. So we ended up having in one snowstorm, I think 4.5 to 5 meters around our house. And we couldn't drive in our car. I bought a key car to be very Japanese. I bought a little key car, and we were going about 20, 15 kilometers an hour for the whole trip. And we were pulling over every 20 minutes because it was so cold and so fierce that the ice wipers weren't working and the radiator was starting to freeze. So we had to make sure that that was kept clear of ice and all of that. So it can get quite harsh up there. And when the snow's on, the snow's on. So
So
I spent,
that's what
I'm
I
not
was
like
that's
you.
what I was aiming for. So you're here mostly during the winter, and you're here for a
I am.
good few months every year, correct?
Yeah, mid-November till this. At the moment, I'm going mid-November, and I come back for one of my daughter's birthdays, which is Christmas Eve, if they're not over there with me. And then I go back sort of mid-January after the girl, just because, just family stuff during the January period. And then I go back for all of winter. So I probably don't leave until March. Family comes over. I think I've got some friends coming over this time. People just give me a yell when they're around, and I just say if I'm there or not. And they're welcome to stay if I'm there for a night or two, and they do their own thing. But yeah, I'm a winter. I'm a snowhound. I love snowboarding. I love the snow, but more importantly, I love life in Otaru. I just love life in Otaru.
So how did the, because you mentioned your Japanese is getting better now, but when you first arrived, you didn't speak, I think not too many even words of Japanese, let alone sentences. And yet you didn't ask us for much help. I mean, we helped you with some stuff that was still related to the seller and the old owner of the house, but everything around town, like to get along, to get people to do work for you, to hook up things for you at the house, you did that all on your own, right? How was that?
Yeah, look, that to me it was a great adventure for me. For others, they might find it quite difficult. I've got a bit of an analytical mind, so I sort of put two and two together all the time, and thankfully it came out as four. Sometimes it came out as three and a half. Sometimes it came out as six. But eventually,
Close
I
enough.
yeah. So eventually, I got there. I had a friend that I made in Japan, Keiko-san, and Keiko-san is through a friend of a friend. Keiko-san is a English-speaking tour guide, which is a very rare thing in Hokkaido, which I didn't know. Keiko and her family are beautiful and Otaru locals, and have been multi-generation Otaru locals. She moved away for uni when she was younger, met a husband, and they both moved back to their home, to her hometown of Otterick. So she helped me a little bit. She actually came to Nithori with me, which is for those who don't know, Nithori is probably a hybrid in Australia between Freedom and IKEA, but that higher quality level, and it's born and bred in Hokkaido. So I thought, well, I'll go there. And Keiko, I just went around and used, she was on the phone to my wife, Belinda, and myself, and we're going this, that, and I've got strict instructions of what sheets have to be in what room and all that, but we just went and buying everything. I bought beds there, dining tables there, you name it, I got it. The bill was astronomical. And they all got typical of Japanese, delivered out the front of the house to the minute that they said that they would be there, perfectly carried in, don't damage anything, unwrap it, set it up, take away the rubbish neatly, and a lovely, lovely experience. So I managed to furnish the place like that. That was great. Toyo, which is kerosene tanks, which I've now going away from just because of just Belinda and I, like my wife and I, like to be carbon neutral as possible. So we're trying to, we're having a little challenge working out solar now. So we're looking at thermal energy.
That's exactly what I mean. That's exactly what I mean. That kind of thing. Okay, shopping, I get it. A little bit of help. You point at stuff and you buy. But I mean, installing a retaining wall and solar panels. And I remember when I was there, you had people out looking at the snow melter machine. How did you manage that? Because that's professional speech that you need to get done, right?
Yeah. So I could communicate. When you're forced into language, you're forced into language. And I picked it up quite well. I sort of started looking around and seeing trucks going with Toyo backwards, kerosene going backwards and forwards.
Yeah.
So I ended up, one fellow turned in the street and I jumped on his truck. And in my pidgin Japanese, explained that I needed Toyo, and he showed me and spoke to me and said, showed me where the measure was. People probably don't know, but on your Toyo tank, there's a little cone measure. And I was only to come and see him down the hardware when it got to the quarter line. Because if I come out on the half line, that's not profitable because they won't come out. So
right.
Learning little things like that. So when it's quarter, out you come, marks on, I'm the only foreign customer they have, pay them my money and they come and top it up and they put the change in my mailbox, trusting as always the Japanese. But yeah, things like, and then I wanted to do some investing. So I was looking at a real estate agent in there, because as you advise me, it's best to get someone who's really local. I know you guys are guns in the main island, but Hokkaido is a world away from Japan. It is like another, the language is so different. Like the
even on the main island, we would always use local agents. We wouldn't presume to do anything ourselves. Same goes for Hokkaido anywhere else. Yeah.
So I met a lovely real estate agent. They're called Masato. And Masato-san's family is multi-generational, Sapporo, ski fields, international ski coaches. So they really know the area. And he started introducing me to a community. And I started meeting electricians. I started meeting builders. I started meeting all that type of thing. So, yeah, you're right. I've had some big stuff done. You know, we've put changed the whole outside of the home. We've put, as I said, beautifully finished Japanese perfection retaining walls, all poured in solid concrete, 6 feet down, 3 feet above, leveled out everything so it's beautiful. We put professionally installed artificial grass out the front because you never use it. So, and it's always, you know, we've got snow for 7 months of the year in reality. So I had all the melt tank done, which is my tank where I melt the snow. I've had glass balustrades put on the back balconies. That's something everyone was looking at going, what is this? What is this? And I said, well, it's what we do in Australia. We love glass. It's simple to look. And again, it had to be earthquake proof. So that was an incredible amount of glass, massively thick. New kitchen. So we ripped out the entire kitchen. So I met a builder who could do the modular kitchen. So I wanted the kitchen was new, but it was only one half, like half a galley. So I wanted the whole lot done. But then I wanted Western stuff in there. So I want a full size fridge. I wanted a massive pantry because I love getting my own food and cooking at home. Mm. I wanted heaps of places. My wife said, look, I want lots of room for pots and pans. It's going to be somewhere we're going to stay for months at a time. And when our children get older, I want it so you and I can enjoy ourselves, not have to struggle along with it. We're not that old. I'm only very early 50s, and my wife's even far less. I had all the walls done. I wanted some things had to be brought up to code. And then once we've got all of those types of things done, I bought a car, all of those types of things, which is another experience in itself. Then we looked at saying, well, right, we want to start Hokkaido Holiday Homes, which is our business, where we want to buy more properties and also work with people who have properties through a network, foreigners, who want to rent out their properties on a centralized platform, rather than doing Airbnb where you really have no control. And there's a lot of restrictions around that. To get a home ready for renting in Otaru is a difficult proposition when dealing with the local council, the fire brigade, and the rules and regulations around.
You've mentioned that they're very strict there, right? Home.
In our suburb, yes, very strict. Toyodai actually does not have any rental properties, holiday short-term rental properties. It's seen as a very, I guess you'd call it an upmarket suburb, but also a very community-orientated suburb. And we are far enough. We've got a school down the road, schools everywhere in Japan, but we're far enough away where we don't breach any regulations. I think it's about a kilometer or 800 meters. You must be away from a school if you're going to casually rent out a home. And there's categories, so we had to work out what category we're in. And we engaged a broker a local property manager in Hokkaido to work with us on that. And his name's Jacob. And Jacob is Mexican-American/Japanese. About to become a citizen of Japan, and he's just helped us out a lot again out of that network, and he's introduced us to more people and more people, and yeah, we've got quite a thriving network of Japanese locals. Where the other one other Westerner, Cam, I call out the Cam, who owns B2E Coffee, the only real coffee in the whole of Otaru. Cam is a Sydney boy, and Western Sydney, and he's helped me out as well. So having an Aussie to chat to and eat some Vegemite on toast in his cafe is a bit of a thrill indeed. So yeah, it's all about building a network, but it's hard to build those networks. So a lot of people have the grandiose plans of, oh, you know, and I've watched a lot of your podcasts and posts and things like that. They're all always interesting, Ziv, but I still see people, you having the same conversations at times. And I guess that's part of your business, is it's not as easy as people think. You're not going to go and buy, great, here's a $1,000 USD abandoned home on half an acre. Great, life's going to be fantastic. What an adventure.
No. Move in ready, and I can rent it out on Airbnb from the next day, right?
It just doesn't work like that at all. Remembering this, as I mentioned before, you helped me with. Tradesmen is a huge thing. Tradesmen aren't like in Western countries. Oh, sorry, I should just comment on what I know. So, like Australia, New Zealand, the US, Canada, where you've got a mate or a brother of a mate down the road who's a builder, or you know a local building company, or we go on an app in Australia. We've got apps where you can get tradesmen. They're not like that. They're usually groups that form together. So one person might be a builder and have a couple of people, and one more person might be a plumber, and then one might be an architect, and one might be a designer, and one might do electrical. And they get together and create a hypothetical ABC Limited. And ABC Limited does all of these works. They go everywhere and do these works, or someone says, I need electrics done, and they say, oh, in our group, we've got an electrician. They'll come out to you. But you've got to then build the relationship and understand rules and regulations around doing those renovations. Well, there's certain things you just cannot do because of earthquake regulations, because of local council regulations, because of community regulations. Like, I wanted to donate, simple thing, I wanted to donate to the community, my community, in Tukrom in Toyodai, so my area of my neighborhood, I wanted to buy a new dustbin. And a dustbin is the centralized rubbish bin down the end of your street. Ours was old, it was tacky, and the elderly people in my neighborhood, I thought, well, that'd be something nice that we could do for the community. That has now been going on for 4 months to get approval to put in a fancy new double door stainless steel off the ground, steel for bears and squirrels and everything like that. That's now, we're now at 4 months. So the community supervisor has said no problems. The community leader has said, the neighborhood supervisor has said no problems. The community leader has said no problems. The community has said no problems. Thank you. We're very grateful. Now it's with City Hall. And City Hall have some questions about how much noise we'll make when we're going to install it. What are we doing with the old rubbish? How long will it take? Is it certified to being bear-proof when there is no certification for bear-proofing? Right. So it's not as, and that's probably a classic example of looking at a home for people. When they're looking at renovating a home, whether it be an abandoned home or it be an investment property that needs slight renovation, it's not as simple as just going, right, I've got a fellow, he's going to do it, he's going to do this, that, and the other. No, it's not as simple as that. You can't just go to Bunnings or Home Depot, pick the things you want and get it done.
DIY the shit out of it. Cases. No.
Yeah. And look, I've seen a lot of people go, no, I'm DIYing, it's fine, it's just me, it's going to live here. And the disasters that happen down the track are really bad. They're actually, I actually heard of a couple of people, not through the grapevine, I actually know directly, who lost their lives just outside of Ottawa because they were doing DIY work and they weren't aware of some of the pressures in the gas lines. And they actually lost their life in a large explosion. So it goes to show you this. It's not like the countries we come from. They are different, as would Japanese coming to Australia. They would be very challenged by our rules and regulations of what we need to do as well. So it's what you know. It's horses for courses. And just throw in a language barrier and you've got a great life adventure, a great challenge, but probably don't go in underprepared. Go in very, very prepared and with two big pocketfuls of patience. And if you do that, you'll enjoy the hell out of yourself.
We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, if that's still a thing, or if you just need somewhere quiet to get away from the world. They offer a variety of options for families, corporate relocations, or even if you're simply transitioning between homes in Tokyo. The properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They come with fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in. Fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know. They're tiny, they're noisy, fine for a night or two if you're on your own. But longer term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly in a Japanese business hotel. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home, with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, etc., you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profit, or a holiday home that you want to rent out when you're not using it via short-term stays, drop them a line today, see how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth a visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at sales@realestate.jp. And now back to the podcast.
I think what I know, because now I know you, but I think a large part of it, and I see this with a few of our other customers who are succeeding when they try these kinds of things, is you got to have the mental flexibility as well to not insist on things should work the way that you're used to and just learn the environment, read the room kind of thing, but on a grander scale, right?
Yeah, and I guess it's also understanding, when it comes to renovation or property development, it's also understanding the Japanese idiosyncrasies and the Japanese technology. So, for example, our front door, it was fine, but we're sort of perfectionists and we like things, do them once, do them right, and they'll last. We take the same philosophy to Japan. So our front door had a few little leak seals around it, nothing major. The snow could have, we've got, you know, obviously the atrium area before we go into the main home, but it was our main door. And the funny thing is Japanese front doors are bulletproof. Like literally you couldn't drive a truck through a Japanese front door. They are in Hokkaido, sorry, because they've got vapor inside them. They're all for the cold. Yet, and they've got every security function you can think of, yet there's no crime.
No.
So, I think, holy mackerel, if we had these in Australia, we'd feel really safe. But in Japan, we've got them, and we don't lock our doors. It's incredible. But a good lesson to be learned is that we didn't fix the door up. So we didn't put seals under it. We didn't have a fellow come out and adjust the hinges and that. Take the whole door out. Like, just take it out. And then they come back in with a fully, they've measured it, they've rang up the modular company. The modular company goes, yes, this modular fit in there. Here's the range that you can choose from. We chose the one that we liked in the modular one, which literally there was 100 to choose from. And we like these fittings. They add those fittings on. They come up in the truck. They put the door, stand the door up, take out a few clips, put in the security bolts into everything around it, and seal it and walk away. So it's things like that where people sometimes think they're saving a dime by, and maybe they want the adventure of DIYing, but even if you're DIYing, try and think the Japanese way. You really need to go, okay, well, I'm not repairing a window. I'll take out the modular window and I'll put in a new modular window. Kitchens come in modules. So don't waste your time, in my opinion, of fixing up old 1970s, 60s. They're not historical. Like, they're not traditional read in a fairy tale Edo period cabinetry. I'm talking 1960s, 1970s, 1980s cabinetry. Don't try and fix it up, because it's actually cheaper and more effective to go to your local Superviva home, like a Bunnings or a Home Depot, and a Hallmark is another one, where you can just go in there, take your measurements in, and you can work it out with Google Translate if you want on your phone, and you can just map out your kitchen, tell them they use centimeters like Australia does, so centimeters, millimeters, how long it is, and they'll actually just show you the cabinetry, or you can measure it yourself, say, I just want that on the dishwasher module, the sink module. And it all comes, and I'll just ask if you want it installed. And for maybe 5,000 N, they'll install it when you buy it, which is really, really cheap. And you're done with the headaches. And I think even if you want a DIY, you can have a great DIY experience, but do it right. And think of the Japanese modular technology and Japanese smart ways of doing things. And if you're coming to Hokkaido, and I guess all of Japan, you must think about earthquakes. You really must think about earthquakes when you're buying a home. If they're dealing with someone like you, if obviously you point out to them the landslide. So are you in a landslide area? Are you in a flood area? Are you in an earthquake prone damage area, like those high, those rating earthquake areas. And you have to renovate accordingly. Don't, if you only need one, earthquake to put every DIY door jam out of whack, every window buckle, floorboards start to move a bit, and you've got all of this extra work that you've just done because you didn't go to an earthquake standard, which is what the modular stuff is built to. It flexes to that, to that type. So that's probably a really good lesson that we've learned in developing our first property.
So listen or learn the market. They use different materials. They might use different products. They might do things in a different way. Just don't insist on what you think you know, kind of thing, right?
That's right. I'm going to do it this way. This is how we do it. It's not done that way for a reason. Some things are done for absolutely silly reason, like anywhere, any country. Some things are really left to center in Japan. But a lot of things actually have, when you try and get over your Western thought of, oh, that's silly, or that's stupid, you think about it and go, okay, there's a rhyme and a reason to why it's done this way. And you just need to take a step back, pause for a little bit to go, okay, that's fine. I got frustrated about it, but now I see why they do it that way. And that has things to do with community. So think of a broader community as well. Don't just think of yourself. And that can sometimes explain why things are done a certain way. And also look at economics. Things are done a certain way as well to continue the flow of business in local communities. So it's not just about the easiest, quickest way, cheapest way to do it. There's other reasons why things are done a certain way.
That was solid gold, man. This is like encapsulated everything we wanted in this podcast right there. I'm going to let you go. But before that, I want our listeners to hear about the, so you've taken all of your experience buying your own holiday home and doing a lot of stuff with it and becoming a part of the community. And then you took that a level up and you started a business around there as well, doing similar things, right?
Yeah. So we're looking at a second property, and then who knows from there. So we started a business, it just happened by accident, actually. We did have a plan, but it sort of happened by accident. We created Hokkaido Holiday Homes, which we put our home under for the time that we're not there, because we quickly worked out that, as I said, winter is very hard to live in Hokkaido in winter. It is very hard to live. I love it. It's a thrill for me, and I've lived in hot all my life. But the times that we're not there are the premium time for international visitors, domestic Japanese visitors. Hokkaido is I think Hokkaido is the most beautiful place on earth. During spring and summer, it's breathtaking. You can go on for days about things that are in Hokkaido, including the greatest food anywhere. And we're going to rent, we decided we'll put our house out. But rather than go to booking.com, Airbnb, not only are they not looked on that favorably in our area, and there are a lot of restrictions around government stuff with it, we also weren't able to manage the type of people that we wanted in our house. We've got a premium home. We call it a home. It is a home. So if you want to refer to it as a property, we've got a premium property, and we've got other like-minded people who came along with premium properties and said, well, you're doing that on your platform, on your website, basically. Can we join into that? And I went, let me have a think about it. So I talked to my IT guys, and we actually built a booking platform, which is not too hard to do, into our website, and we can add more and more properties. And the way that we do it is, rather than just go click, 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 you actually can go through our calendar to make a booking, see what's available, send us an email on the contact form, which has more details than normal about what's your name, what's your group, where are you from, what are you doing, things like that. Do you want a taxi from the airport, or do you want a taxi from the train station? How can we help you a bit? And we actually then go, once you've had a look at it, we might contact them or actually decline them to stay in our home. Like if we had, I'm just making this up. Well, actually, I've got one that's pretty near to the truth. We had a group of 18-year-olds from a particular country. There were our home sleep eight comfortably. It's a lovely home, three separate bedrooms and a traditional room. They had six, and they said, "Oh, there could be up to 10 coming." And they sort of put their agent down to that, and we went, "Look, probably not the place for you to stay." Our alarm bells are going off, going, "Oh my god, maybe 10, maybe 30." I got to land in Boyodai, and a lovely, quiet neighborhood of very respectful people are going to go, "Mark's son, Melinda's son, what have you done to us?" And it'd take a lot of apologizing, a lot of bottles of whiskey that I'd have to deliver all around the neighborhood just to get everybody back on side. And I'd probably lose our license as well, our hotel license, which is what translates to.
Now, here's some big news for anyone interested in Akiya, the abandoned vacant homes that are abundant all around Japan for very attractive purchase prices. Akiya Mart, our latest sponsor, is a recently founded online search and discovery tool for Japanese real estate. Its user interface will be very familiar to users of Zillow or Redfin. The platform essentially scouts the internet for property listings, translates them into English, and displays prices in US dollars, all in one place and with a dynamic map interface that makes browsing, finding, and shortlisting your favorite properties a piece of cake. Which any of you have been struggling with the dozens, if not hundreds, of Japanese property websites that are available online and their very clunky interface will probably find a real blessing. They've got already over 500,000 listings on the platform, and the database is expanding daily. Ranging from abandoned rural homes to luxury urban properties, Akiya Mart makes it easy to find your dream home in Japan, regardless of your budget. Now, while the platform is essentially free for use, here's an exclusive offer for listeners of the podcast. You can use the promo code NTI to receive $5 off Akiya Mart Pro. The subscription will unlock a bunch of very attractive features for you, including unrestricted access to the entire nationwide property database and a whole range of filters, which will help power charge your search for that elusive perfect home and make it even easier. So hop over to akiya-mart.com. That's AKIYA-MART, akiya-mart.com, and kick off your search today.
So we got more people wanting to come onto our platform. We're very choosy. At the moment, we're just evaluating a few now to bring a few more onto there. It'll sort of just be, it'll be a casual business, it'll be more premium than anything else. So rather than people going, "Oh, I've got Airbnb," as I said, all the problems that go with it, we can actually work together with these premium properties, and it'll probably only be about, at the end of the day, maybe by 2026, we hope to have about 10 or 11 properties on our site and working on our platform. And it's a very personalized experience, and it follows the philosophy, two philosophies really, Japanese. Our decor and design and we incorporate ikigai into our designs to make it relaxing, to make it a very fulfilling home to holiday in. And the other thing is, as I mentioned before, local experience. So you're not dealing with a hotel room. You're not dealing with someone who's got 35 Airbnbs and this just happens to be the one you can get into and use your money and you're out the door. We do things like we can arrange through our network, lovely golf tours. If you want to go on those, we can help you get a car. We can help you get a taxi. We can help you with all these things. Obviously they pay the people who are doing the work for them. But we can organize it for you in no effort, well, because we know these people, and we know they're trustworthy people. We know they're lovely people. We know there's quality. And if a family of six lands at Hokkaido Airport and they take our house or one of our other houses on there, we know the taxi driver really well who will pick them up. And we know it's a licensed one. We know that if they want to go to Kokosai and do some boarding, we know we can get, we've got a friend up there who can say, "Yeah, no problem. We'll meet you here," because no English. And I'll get you tickets for the kids and we'll get tubes for the kids and you guys can get on the lifts and we can tell them, we list on our website, like even things like restaurants, our local restaurants. We tell where I took you to Hirasan's.
That was amazing.
In Arthur. It is. It's breathtaking. He is literally the most amazing chef I've ever come across. He's beautiful. So we went to Hiro, we give them a list of restaurants where they can go to in the local area and where's 10-minute drive and they can use our car, they can rent our car if they want to. So it's a very different way of doing it, and it's getting we're able to help like-minded people like ourselves, you know, getting established and so forth. As I said, we just met a husband and wife, believe it or not, 45 minutes away from us on the Gold Coast, and bought a bloody house in Otteru, one suburb away from us. It's weird. It's very unusual, and we can help them, you know, how to get kerosene, where to shop, who to go to, who to talk, how to get a tradesman, all of those types of things. We can just use our network of friends, and dare we say we call them family now, to help them out. And at the same time, we then give that broader experience to people who want to come and rent one of these lovely homes and don't have to worry about being a, in Australian terminology, a shitbox house. It's a lovely home, and you've got freedom to move, and it's not cramped, and it's not, you know, it's not, you know, it's not like a capsule. It's not like a capsule hotel overnight, or it's not like a hotel that's advertised as wide lens camera, and you get into some in Kyoto, and that, and you're like, oh my god, this is a 3-bedroom hotel. It's incredible, but yeah, they're very bad at doing that. They're pretty buggers with the photo lenses. But yeah, look, and that's what we're doing, and it's just called HokkaidoHolidayHome.com. We were lucky enough to get that domain. I don't know how, but anyway, we got it. So so that's it. But and it all started with you, my man.
Well, you took off on your own double quick. I don't think we have a single customer who was that independent that quickly. That's part of the success. And you mentioned you're eyeing another property now. What's the goal with the next one?
We're taking our time. We actually did put an offer on two properties. One we got to signing, and then we found out that one of those ancient organizations owned it.
Oh, the anti-social forces. Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah. And we didn't really want to deal with them. It wasn't the upper one. It was the lower one, the doers one. They and Ziv can explain who it is. I don't want to say it, but Ziv can explain who that is. So we sort of stopped that one, and then we saw another one. We've got another one that was just not far from our house, and when we had the building inspection done, we actually used the same building inspector that you recommended to us initially, who is the most finicky building inspector ever, legend. He picked up two pieces of crumpled paper in our slab area and said that they should be removed before we move in. It was great. It was great. He put red circles around it. These papers must be removed. I'm like, I love you. And there were some issues with the home. It just wasn't, for the price they were asking, there shouldn't have been those types of issues. And then we found out there was some family stuff in there. And we're actually looking at the moment at an abandoned home, which is, we actually met the gentleman before he passed away. So sad, no family. But one of my friends, Jacob's son, who I've introduced you to, Jacob actually went and sat by his bedside in his remaining days, and he's well and truly in his 100, just over 100. His house he hasn't been in it for 6 years. Taxes have been paid and all of that type of stuff, and rates, what we call rates. We're actually looking at that home at the moment, and working with some, Hokkaido is the only prefecture that has its own, Akia bank. So the rest of Japan have a multitude Akia bank. So you've got to go through every prefecture, every town, every village to find something, whereas Hokkaido has its own, unique one. So we're waiting for that. And then it's delineated down to cities. So now it's waiting on the city council. And unfortunately, we can't do anything until the taxes aren't paid and the rates run out, which is shortly. But then there'll be a lot of work, as you know, to get a simple home.
But what's the goal with that one, though? Is that going to be a rental home or a holiday home?
Yeah. No, it'd be a holiday rent, probably a mixture of the two. We probably personally may not stay in it. It'll be just as nice as our other one. We overcapitalized to the bloody hills, I can tell you. No, it'll just be for rental. We know where to go to now. We actually went the wrong way originally with licensing our home, but now we know the right way to go and how it's got to be done, and the safety features, and the fire thing is huge in Hokkaido. So a lot of fire, a lot of photosynthetic switches, and direct lines to the fire department, and the new law, which you're probably aware of, which is the video camera and the iPad, or the iPad with the video camera, for all rental
If it's not
properties now.
manned, right?
So that's right. If it's not manned, that's how they got away from that concierge rule that they used to have, or living within 100 meters of the property someone manager had to be. To get away from that now is this iPad and camera, which is using technology, but is also Westerners see that, and I agree with them, to be honest with you, as an invasion of privacy, because it's a different language and you don't know where those images are going to. You don't know where certain things are going. So we've put our own, we then took a long time, but I said, look, I want a VPN put around these devices in this house. So those images go nowhere. I want them in the VPN. So if anyone downloads an image from, let's say, a government authority, we would know about it, and we could go, hey, why are you downloading our customer's photo? And that you're not allowed to do that, but the security we've got, they can't do it anyway. So
Sometimes the
they're little
gaijin
things
way
that people
is
need to be
better.
careful.
Sometimes
Sometimes, guys, you know what they're
the,
talking about, but
yeah.
if you ask locals, it's very rare.
Yeah, of course.
It's very rare that we know what we're talking about. But and look, simple little, they're just things through experience you start thinking about. Normally, I wouldn't have, but it's just something that pricked my ears because I'm in that field, and I went, oh, that's great. And but then, yeah, there's simple things that they do that we think is too simple, and we can go, oh, no, it should be more on that, but it's not the Japanese way. So we get it, and we go with punches. So yeah, second property would be that, and then the other properties are pretty much like us. They're holiday homes for people, they're families from Australia and US and Canada. An Italian, well, Italian, believe it or not, Italian married to an Australian, quite interesting. And they're the same. They are there for extended periods of loving Hokkaido life and loving Otaru. But they're only there either in springtime, or they're winter bunnies like me. And then the home sits empty, basically. And they don't want to go to Airbnb, they don't want to pay the exorbitant fees that are on there and things like that, but also they don't, you lose control of it as well. And they love their properties, so they don't want to just go, oh yeah, here's Jimmy Jim from some country I've never heard of, or the other side of the world, and we don't know anything about them, but Airbnb said they're great. So it's sort of that type of setup, and people don't want to take the risk. So just a group we're giving a different option to, different way of doing business, and it's fun.
That's a
It's
fantastic
interesting.
initiative. Wishing you a lot of luck, mate, with that one and with the new property when you do buy
Yeah.
it. And
Yeah,
thank you for
yeah,
telling all of our viewers and listeners what it actually takes to make that dream come true. Because, like you mentioned, people have these hype dreams, and they are possible, they are
yeah.
feasible, but they really need to know what's involved, and they really need to be flexible enough to kind of roll with the punches, because they will come, won't they?
Oh, there's we haven't touched on a ten a hundredth of the issues that you come across, and but they're all manageable. But as you say, you've just got to take those punches as they come and go, I'm doing this for a particular reason, and I can't lose sight of that reason why I'm doing it. For me personally, I think moving to Otaru has greatly improved my life, but I also think it's saved me in part of my life as well from just stresses of business and stresses of sort of everyday life. And it's opened me up to being a lot more patient, a lot calmer. And so it's had some massive positives for me. And I think people just need to keep that in mind when they're going on their journey. And believe me, it is worth it at the end of the day. But you need a network. You need that network. You need the you know, the MTI giving you advice of getting the property and so forth. But then you need to work with you and work with others to say, well, who do you know? And then start building that network up there. The Japanese language is not becoming, English speaking is becoming better and better in Hokkaido. And as technology evolves, really knowing a second language is going to become second rate. AI has already proven that in a very short time that it's doing it now. And it won't be long till translation devices are top of the range and real time. And so you'll be able to do what you need to and talk the cute Japanese way.
Yeah. Well, you deserve the good karma, man. You're seriously one of our nicest customers. You say you have stress from work, but from day one, you've been one of our chillest customers. You take everything in your stride, and it's a pleasure to work with you. And there's a reason you're succeeding. So thank you. Thank you for sharing this with everyone. Appreciate it.
Thanks to you and Chika. You were starting me on a great journey, and you continue to help us out to no end. So thanks for that. And we'll just keep the management stuff with you guys all the time. It's really good.
Fantastic. And thanks for your time. Talk to you soon.
No problem at all. Take care.
So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Mark Porter. We are personally very proud to have been his first stepping stone into Japan's property market, and we cannot wait to see what he gets up to next and how his ventures will perform in the years to come. So watch this space if you are as well. We will try to get him back on in a year or two to update us on his progress up there in Otaru, Hokkaido, and share some more of his stories with us. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time, and until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.